Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much for joining us. Some things going to happen differently today, so pay close attention, please. First of all, I want to make an announcement that we do have scheduled political interviews coming up later this month. They'll start at about on the 24th. That'll be a Wednesday, 3 days of political interviews. And then the following Tuesday, which I believe will be the 30th, we'll have a full hour on the county code amendments that are being proposed. So that's the situation that we have here. If you're looking to follow a particular candidate or want to hear some things in particular, we have a list, a schedule list of who's appearing when on our station's website. There's a big red banner up there. Just click on that and you'll find the full schedule there. Once again, that's beginning to happen on the 24th of this month. So that's the situation there. Hope you stay informed there and cast an informed ballot. Today we have two different guests. We're going to divide the program in half. The number to call, if you want to jot it down, and we'll do it a little bit differently today, and I'll just make an announcement when phone lines are open if you have a question or comment for our guest today. In the first half hour, we're welcoming you to the microphones of KAJO. The county assessor, Chris Parton, is with us. And, Chris, welcome to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Glad to have you with us today. And this is your first appearance here since your appointment.
Hi, Chuck. Yes, thanks for having me. That's correct. I was appointed by the county commissioners as assessor as of January 1st. So the prior assessor, Connie Roach, who had been there for many years, retired. They had put out an advertisement to seeking input from folks who might want to apply for the position. I was one of those folks, and so I've been there for, you know, four and a half months now. So previous to that, I was in the office as the chief deputy assessor. So I was I had the lucky job of calculating everybody's tax bill and dealing kind of the grease of the axle there, so to speak. And so now I'm in this position, and I'm really enjoying it. We've got a lot of great folks down in the office right now. I've got a good crew of folks. And so you're only as good as the folks that are working with you. So I really appreciate them.
We want to get into your office and what exactly happens there. I do feel the need to, I've been giving this some thought, and I think we do need to make an announcement today that Chris Parton's name will be on the ballot, but you're running unopposed. This is not a political interview. This is an informational situation that we have here. We've got the county assessor sitting right here waiting for your phone calls, and we'll open that up a little bit earlier today, a little bit later on in the program. But what do people need to know about the county assessor's office? What questions do you get there most often?
Mm-hmm. Good question. You know, it's an interesting position to be in. It's an interesting office. It's kind of one of those offices where people think they know what we do, or they don't know at all. And so it's been interesting. I've talked to folks, and they've asked me before at the counter or on a phone call, what exactly do you guys do down there? And so it's a bit of a, you know, mystery sometimes to folks. But the short answer is, you know, we're responsible for assessing, slash appraising, slash valuing all of the real property, personal property. It also includes utilities that are state assessed, but we administer that. And so we basically are following the law. The term assessor shall shows up in the Oregon statutes roughly 230 times. So we're basically functioning under state law, state mandated program to assess the property. We're kind of the, again, to use that metaphor of the axle and the grease in the axle, we're kind of the office that basically is the go-between between the public and their desires, the voters, when they decide to pass a new levy or not. And then we're the ones that value the property and make those two pieces come together and send out tax bills every year.
So basically you're assessing every inch of land in Josephine County. That sounds like a monumental job.
It is a big job. You know, actually, we're responsible for roughly $16 billion in market value, taxable market value. That does not include value for things like public improvements like streets and light poles and sidewalks or, you know, city sewer, things like that. It's a taxable property. So, yeah, $16 billion of market value and right about $9.6 billion in actual assessed value, which comes out to about $93 million in taxes last year where we billed for. So,
gracious. What has the recent inflationary situation done with the tax assessment right here? I know real estate prices have gone sky high. How's that affecting my assessment?
Yeah, it's a good question. The short answer is I don't know yet. I'm actually working right now with my data analyst looking at those numbers. And it does vary between the city and the county. So there are areas where, for example, where I live out in Selma, well, there was a big spike out there, as you many folks probably know, in nice farmable parcels. Mm-hmm. And so the market for those was sky high for several years, and people were getting just, you know, very, you know, record-setting sales prices on those properties. And that market has since, by and large, dried up. We're seeing declines out there. The city of Grants Pass, as of right now, seems to be kind of holding its own. The properties seem to have more or less plateaued. The values are kind of holding steady. But, you know, no one has a crystal ball, but if I could speculate on something, if I indulge myself in that, I do expect a decline in market values over the next some years. I mean, I think it's obvious to anyone who's paying attention. We're kind of at the end of a cycle of the boom, and I don't think we're looking at a bust. You know, notwithstanding some sort of crazy, you know, crazy event outside of our control, but I would expect there to be kind of a cooling trend for the next couple of years.
So it doesn't always have to go up.
Well, good question. So right now we're talking about the value of your property as of January 1st. So that's the annual assessment date. So most people are going to see probably there may be some neighborhoods in the area in the county that have a slight increase. Some folks are going to kind of see kind of a flattening. I expect, like I said, this is just speculation. We're in the midst of doing the work right now. And then some folks are going to see some declines. And so that's your market value, your assessed value, which is largely disconnected from your market value, will go up most likely at least 3%.
3% is capped. You can't go any higher than
that. That's correct. And so that's a good thing I want to mention, though, is that with the new law enforcement district, a 99-cent permanent rate that got approved by the voters recently, one of the questions we get is, hey, during tax time in October, November timeframe, hey, the law says you can't increase my taxes more than 3%. Mine went up 4.2%. Well, that's not quite right. So the way that actually works is it's actually your maximum assessed value that's capped at the 3%. But obviously, if your maximum assessed value goes up 3%, and in the last year, voters have approved a new levy or a new permanent rate or a new law enforcement district, for example, well, that 99 cents, that's going to be that 3% increase in the assessed value.
Plus the 99 cents.
Plus your 99 cents. People in the county are going to be seeing, even if you see a slight reduction in your market value, your assessed value is going to go up roughly 3%, depending if you've done new construction, things like that, of course. But if you haven't done anything and you look at your tax bill and your assessed value goes from $100,000 to $103,000, 3%, perfect. But my taxes went up by 4.5%. Well, that's why. It's because the voters passed that law enforcement levy, and so they're going to get a bump. So that's one of the big questions we get every year is, hey, my taxes are capped at 3%. Well, it's not quite right. It's that maximum assessed value.
Let's ask here's one. Market value as opposed to assessed value. What is the difference? What's the determining factor?
Mm-hmm. Good question. So market value is what we believe the property is worth as of January 1st every year. So the assessed value is the lower of your real market value and your maximum assessed value. So that maximum assessed value is a number that was created when Measure 50 was passed by voters in 1997. So that's why I mentioned earlier, I said there's kind of a disconnect, and that's why. It's because Measure 50, you know, basically took your market value from your 1995 value, knocked off 10%, and created this new number per statute, per voter-approved initiative, and created this thing called maximum assessed value. So what happens, and you can see this on our website, we have a neat little tool where folks can pull up their property and they can kind of graph it out and see how it works. But your market value can go up and down independently of your assessed value. Most folks are just seeing a very steady climb, 3% per year, because your assessed value, again, like I said, is the lower of that real market value or the maximum assessed value. And so since maximum assessed value goes up typically 3% per year for unchanged properties, that's going to be the lower number. So worst case scenario, the real estate market drops 50%. You know, that's a situation where you might see a person might see some tax break, because if your maximum assessed value is $200,000 and your market value goes from $400,000 to $100,000, you know, all of a sudden your assessed value is now based on that $100,000. So it's a year-to-year calculation.
So there is a situation where that it might not go up 3%. Is that what I just heard there?
Yeah, that's correct.
It would take a particular situation for that to happen.
That's correct. So like I said, it's a property-by-property calculation. But if in that scenario, in that hypothetical scenario, your value, your market value goes to $100,000 and your maximum assessed value is $200,000, that maximum assessed value freezes. So that's part of Measure 50 also, is it only goes up to 3% unless – like I said, this is for unchanged properties, but it only goes up. It's capped and then it's frozen. If the market does take, if it really did tank like that, then it's frozen for until it comes back again.
Unchanged properties,
correct.
Okay. We'll explore that when I come back. We've got a commercial message here that we've got to get out. We'll do that right after, and we'll talk with more with County Assessor Chris Barton right after this. Welcome back to the Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. We have the County Assessor Chris Barton here with us today, and he's got to leave right at the top of the hour. So a little change in the situation here. We're just going to open up the phone lines. If you have a question or comment for the County Assessor, the number to call is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the phone coming, sound of the radio coming back through your phone, that means that you're next in queue, and we'll put you on the air live just as soon as we complete the thought that we're on. Now, just prior to that commercial break, we were talking about unchanged properties. What would constitute a change that's going to affect my taxes? Is it significant if I just put up a shed out back? What's going to happen?
Yep, good question. So that's directly related to what change has occurred. So everyone kind of knows that, well, if I build a new house, my tax, that's a changed property, right? And that's a big value increase. You build a $300,000 home, obviously your taxes are going to go up. Now, a lot of times people don't think about land. So per Measure 50, when you subdivide or partition your property, that's considered a changed property also in your your assessed value does get recalculated. So I will say with the way Measure 50 functions, you are the biggest benefit you're going to get in the strategy a person might want to employ in getting a tax break is immediately following a big event, a changed property, building a new house, building a shop or something, or having your property subdivided, for example. Because what happens is that initial year of that new property establishes that new maximum assessed value, and from there it grows 3%. You know, so like I said, you could come in and talk to us. Let's say your house was built in 2001. You come into the counter and talk to us during tax time and say, "Hey, you've got my property at $400,000, my tax, you know, I want to get it. It's not worth more than $325,000. Let's say, well, your maximum assessed value is, you know, back to that $200,000, and so, you know, we could lower it. And we do. We're not, you know, we want it right just like you do. But you're not going to see a tax break, back to that idea of the lower of the real market value or the maximum assessed value or assessed value.
All right. We do have a call coming in. Good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Chris Parkin?
Yes. This is Rika Brown.
Yes, Rika.
And I do believe that during the pandemic, property values went down a bit, but mine particularly. And I actually had a reduction in my tax.
Really?
Yes.
Want to trade properties? I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rika.
Yeah, you don't. Well, It's a nice property, actually. Well gardened. But, I'm pretty sure that, you know, it might have just been the assessed value went down, but except you said it was frozen. Then it actually went down.
It's very astute, Rika. So one of the things that happened in the last couple of years was there were some expiring bonds and expiring, I think it was Three Rivers School District, and last year with the 4-H, not levying any taxes. There, especially out like where I live in Selma, there were folks out there who saw a reduction in their tax rate, and so much so that even though maybe your assessed value may have even gone up 3%, some folks saw a slight reduction. I'm actually one of those folks too. I just by the nature of where I live, I don't remember getting any calls this year from people in Selma.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, I guess there were some bonds that just went away. Like I think it was the jail bond.
There's been a few over the last few years, and I can't remember off the top of my head which one came off which year. My tax bill was just like that. It went down just a hair.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for calling.
All right. Thank you, Rika. All right. We were talking about unchanged property and what will affect that and what happens. Now, if I get my tax bill and I go through the roof and I say, well, those crazy so-and-sos, who do I have a way to appeal?
Oh, of course. So there's multiple levels of appeal rights. What we prefer is to have just folks call our office during tax time. The tax bills are mailed out by October 25th per state statute. And so usually they're sent out before that, but there's a good 6 weeks or so before you even have to pay the bill to get the 3% discount. But you can actually contact us up until about a week before the end of the calendar year and just call and say, hey, I need to talk to an appraiser. My value's too high. I think you made a mistake, X, Y, you know, whatever it might be. And so we call that a request for review. So there's no fee for that. We work together and cooperate on coming up with, okay, well, what information do you have? Maybe we've got some bad information and we work to resolve it. If that doesn't resolve it, then the next step would be appealing. The property taxpayer would appeal with the county clerk's office. I do believe there's a $30 fee per appeal, if I remember right. And so you would file an appeal with them, and then you would go before the local. They used to be called BOPTA, which is short for Board of Property Tax Appeals. State law recently changed that to Property Value Appeals Board. So PVAB, that's our new lingo in the office.
PVAB.
PVAB, I know.
I hate acronyms.
Oh, then you wouldn't like working in our office because we have hundreds of I've been told that we throw them around too easily. So I try not to use them much. But so you can appeal to the county clerk and you can present your case in front of a local board, usually made up of most of the folks are usually retired professionals, retired bankers, real estate agents, principal brokers, folks like that, people who have some knowledge of the local market, and then they'll make their decision. And if you're still not happy, then you can appeal to the Oregon Tax Court, the Magistrate Division, and in Salem. And so you would go through that process, and if you're still not happy, you can appeal to the regular division of the Oregon Tax Court. And if you're not happy with that decision, your next step will be the Oregon Supreme Court.
So there's lots of levels, and you're the first level.
Correct.
You're the first level. All right. And how closely do you work with the county clerk?
We're very much connected in sense of like at a high level. One of our big tasks that it's a never ending job of making sure our ownership records are up to date. So in the 25 minutes we've been on the radio, you know, there's been, you know, probably a dozen deeds recorded, people buying property. And so we work with them on that in terms of making sure our ownership records are up to date.
We talked earlier about the monumental task of assessing this county. Well, how big a staff do you have here? How many people really are working in your department?
Sure. Yeah, we have 16 and a half FTE. So some of those are part-time. Our customer service folks are some of our customer service folks are half-time, just as a cost-saving measure. We have, So we got 16 and a half people all together.
All right. And your office in the courthouse, how do we get a hold of you? Phone numbers, email, what's the best way? Can I just walk into the office?
Oh, of course. Yeah. So our office window hours, our walk-up hours are Monday through Thursday, 9:30 to 4, Friday by appointment. Like I said, for cost-saving measures, we're closed on Friday, but we'll always accommodate folks if that's what works for them. Or you can give us a call, 541-474-5260.
5260. Okay. Is there a place where I can do my homework? Is that on the website also?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you bet. So we send people there all the time who maybe need some documents or just want to read some more. There's more resources there than I'm going to rattle off here. But yeah.
Yep. All right. Chris, I've got about a little over a minute left here before we have to break away for news. So what should I take away from today's conversation that we've had here? We've been kind of learning about the assessor's office and what we can do and how you work there and the monumental task of assessing the county. What do people really need to understand about your office, real simply?
I will say, obviously being a The assessor's office is not popular.
And you asked for the job.
I did. I don't begrudge anyone for feeling like, I've been called plenty of names and developed a thick skin over the years. But it is an important job. We only do what the voters ask us to do and what state law provides, which, again, is dictated by the voters and legislators. But we are available. We just want it right like anybody else. We're just trying to do our job as best we can. And so I don't want to make it sound like I'm from the government and I'm here to help kind of a thing. But, I think most of the time, folks leave our office after talking with us. Most of the time they do feel like it was resolved and they were helped.
All right. Chris Burton, County Assessor. Thank you very much for your time. And good luck next October.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. You've been talking with the County Assessor here on KAJO Radio. Stay tuned. Following news, we'll bring in the Airport Director, Mr. Steve Dobbs, right here on the Tuesday Talk Show. Welcome to the Tuesday Talk Show, second portion today, second half here. Just a brief announcement. Once again, we have candidate interviews coming up beginning about the 24th of this month. That's a Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. And the following Tuesday, we'll have a special one-hour program on the county code amendments that have been proposed. So that's the situation here. If you're looking for specific names and numbers and when they'll be on the air, I suggest you check on the station's website at kajo.com. They are listed there. They've been listed this morning. There's a big red banner there. Just click on that and you'll get the full schedule. So that's our situation here. Good morning. Talk show of the day. Number to call, 541-472-1270. Hold your calls right now, at least for the moment. We probably will open up shortly. But in the meantime, I want to welcome to the microphones the director of Josephine County's airport, Steve Dobbs. Steve, welcome back to the microphones of KAJO Radio. Glad to have you here with us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Let's see. The Grants Pass Airport really is one of the areas at Grants Pass where, it contributes greatly to income for the county. It's become a financial center, has it not?
It is a source of revenue with the rentals and hangar leases and all that. It's not a large moneymaker. We're just hopefully can cover costs for keeping the operations going.
All right. Yeah. Tell me about the operations now, because occasionally I hear about expansions, and I know there's plenty of land out there for expansion. What's the long-range plan? Where are we now in relation to that?
Yeah, we're currently with a couple projects. So we're growing slowly every year. We get some grant funding for each particular fiscal year. We just wrapped up our big fuel farm out at Grants Pass Airport, which allows us to flow more Jet A fuel and 100 low lead. We just started our runway extension at Grants Pass. That's going to add another 700 feet in length. That is in the design phase, and that'll start construction in 2025. That'll open things up for larger aircraft to come into the area and take off from the area. So that'll be a big plus just for increased, hopefully, in business and travel.
All right. That extra 700 feet, an increase in business and travel, what really will that mean? Because we're not going to have a trunk airline in here. We're not going to have scheduled passenger service.
No, but down the road a ways, the longer the runway, it could someday be where there could be maybe, you know, a cargo, whatever, you know, FedEx wanted to do something, that there'd be that probability because they'd be able to land aircraft that they could do that. Yeah, we wouldn't have like commercial terminals and all that, but it does increase the opportunity for other businesses to have a footprint on the airport and have their corporate aircraft operate out of there and fly to other parts of the United States from there. Too short of a runway, you can't have aircraft that would be able to get very far. So it is a limiting factor on growth for businesses.
All right. So we'll begin construction on that next year.
Yep.
Next year.
And break ground.
How long will it take to complete?
It should be roughly a year to complete from the first shovel in the ground. It sounds like a lot, but actually it's not. Some of the projects have taken a couple years. It's basically like just putting in a big glorified road, right? So that's the positive end of it. It's just, you know, road base and asphalt. It has to be a little different than like what Public Works puts in for roads here because it has to handle more weight. But it's a fairly easy project. It's basic earth moving, laying down the base, asphalting it, striping it, putting lights. So it tends to be a faster project.
Just time and materials, and we've got the space to get it done, and we've got the funding to get that done.
Yep,
all right.
We do.
Once complete, is there a percentage of increase of traffic or revenue coming out from that?
It wouldn't be directly.
Can you project that now?
Hard to project. Everything that we do, like with the FAA for funding, it's all based on what they call number of operations, how many planes and what type of airplanes. An operation is a takeoff and a landing. So as the runway gets longer, there'll be more aircraft coming in. And if somebody wanted to start a business and had corporate aircraft, that'd be the only way to really get an increased revenue to the county would be the ground lease for whatever hangar they decide to build or a business that would be on the airport property.
Talking long term now, and you mentioned the possibility of maybe a freight operation, a FedEx or something, wanting to utilize this. Mm-hmm. Would we be in competition with the Medford Airport, perhaps with lower fees here in order to attract some of that, still with access to I-5?
I don't think we'd probably get in that kind of a situation. It'd probably be down the road several years. The thing that might work to our advantage is, as you said earlier, we have a lot of available land. So Medford and many airports are starting to get landlocked. So as they expand, they're going to hit a point where they can't grow anymore. And so then carriers would want to then look at for alternate airports to operate out of.
So we've got all that land out there available. What is the long-term scope? What is the long-term plan? Do we have a 20-year plan out there for the airport?
We don't have a 20-year. We've got a 10-year. And so the 700 feet we're starting now, as soon as that's finished, we're going to add another 800 feet on that. So the FAA requested that we break that in. We wanted a full 1,500 feet, which would really open up a tremendous amount of traffic as far as larger aircraft. But we had to break that into two phases. So at the end of 25, we'll start immediately planning to do the additional 800 feet to try to get that full length that we wanted. And that'll we've got a lot of land to do that. We just need to get that tarmac in there so that those planes can land.
All right. Long term, do we have the ability to to control the air traffic? I'm talking about safety features, situations like that.
We don't. We're a non-towered airport currently, and the point where an airport would consider going to a towered and have air traffic control presence would be, again, based on the number of operations. So if with the longer runway, we had a greater increase in air traffic. At some point down the road, they would probably go and have to put a tower in, and that way it could be controlled.
That would be a significant elevation of services.
Definitely. That would be down the road a ways.
Okay. Is that within the 10-year plan?
I'd say that'd probably be at the tail end of the tenure. We'd probably be actively talking in 10 years about doing that.
All right. What is the situation right now out there? I know that we're selling fuel. I know that we've got jets in and out of there. And are we prepared for the summer season for firefighting?
That's a great question. So this past wildfire season was a very busy time for us, both at Grants Pass Airport and Illinois Valley Airport. As you know, we support all the wildfire firefighting assets, air assets. So at the peak of the season, we had about 12 helicopters at Grants Pass Airport, ran out of room to park them. Then we ended up having to put about 7 of them out at Illinois Valley when they had the fires last season. So based on that, we've got some bulldozer work that's going on, and we're trying to flatten more areas and eventually gravel so there'll be more staging areas for firefighting helicopters.
At both operations, Illinois Valley and Grants Pass?
Yep. And the only thing with the Illinois Valley was that we just ran out of room at Grants Pass. What a lot of people don't realize is when you bring in one helicopter, it comes with a fuel tender, which is a tractor trailer like you see going up and down 5-5. Mm-hmm. Has a huge diesel trailer of shop and mechanics. And then
the support group. Yeah.
Totally, yeah. So their footprint for one helicopter is pretty large with all the vehicles and the personnel. So as much land as we have, we're kind of limited because they can't get them too close to trees and all that. So we're currently have a bulldozer out there. We're clearing a lot of that land so that we could, if we needed to, we could park more firefighting aircraft.
Planning ahead for that.
Yeah.
Current day-to-day operations right now, what do you deal with out there?
Yeah, never have to go looking for anything to do. So
I'll bet.
As many people would know if you've been out there, it's older structures. So we've got county hangars that were built 50s, early 60s. And so the maintenance on the doors, somebody could think of it as a super big garage, right? They have rolling doors, all the hardware, constant maintenance on those. We've got really tight parameters on our grass. Per FAA regs, we can't get over 6 inches. So when it's like now with spring and summer, we're mowing like crazy.
It's growing like crazy.
Yeah,
right there.
And so that keeping on top of that and doing all the tractor work is a busy time. And we're limited there because once fire season and they can't do controlled burns anymore, we pretty much have to stop our mowing activity. So it's a race against the clock.
Okay. We're talking with Steve Dobbs, the airport director for Josephine County, and we'll continue that conversation right after this word. Welcome back to Tuesday Talk Show, ladies and gentlemen. We have the airport director, Steve Dobbs, in studio today. And if you have a question or comment for Steve, by all means, give us a call. Number is 541-472-1270. And when you hear the sound of the radio coming back to your phone, that means that you're next in queue. And as soon as we complete the thought that we're on, we'll put you on the air and let you air your question live. Steve, we've been talking about the airport right now, and I hear more and more about the airport just in casual conversations right now. How much growth are we really seeing out there since you've been in charge out there?
Really slow growth. We've had we're stagnant as far as new hangar development, but we've got a few in queue. There's a few individuals that want to build hangars. So that's just starting out, but it's slow. The economics of being an aviator is pretty tough, right? The cost of the airplane, but then if somebody wants to build their own hangar, that could be, you know, $100,000 minimum. So there's not a lot of people lined up to build. We do have a hangar wait list of about 24 people, so there's people outside that would like to migrate and relocate to Southern Oregon, and they're looking for a hangar for their aircraft. Yeah.
All right. So we're a wait list of 24 all looking for space at our airport here.
Correct.
Incredible. Yeah. So those aircraft aren't here right now?
No. And a few that are, they're just parked outside. But I've come to learn that aircraft owners are much like a Corvette owner, right? They don't want their baby sitting out in the sun and the rain. They'd like to have it in a hangar. So even though we have tie-down space available, that's usually not the case. So they may leave their airplane in California or Idaho or Bend or wherever, but they're on the list to do that, which has prompted us to start getting bids for putting in 6 more county hangars.
Fuel costs.
Fuel costs are up. I mean, right now it's like $6.70 for Jet A and I think $6.49 for 100 low lead. So, yeah, fuel's kind of expensive, definitely.
All right. That's part of the revenue stream coming out of the airport, is it not, is our fuel sales?
Yeah, we don't make a lot of money. We have what's called a flow fee, so we just get a 35 cents per gallon that's sold, and that goes to maintaining the equipment. So it's not really a moneymaker. It's just a service that's obviously needed. If we had an airport without fuel sales, you don't get much traffic, which is kind of our problem at Illinois Valley, which is why we've started to put a fuel farm out there to be able to sell fuel. That makes it more of a destination airport. People are willing to go there if they know they can get fuel and fly away.
All right, so what is the purpose, or how soon will we have a fuel farm at the Illinois Valley Airport?
So that's just wrapping up the design phase. So we hope to start construction on that later this year, actually. That'll be a fairly quick project, too, because it'll be there's never been a fuel station out there. So we'll be putting in on flat ground. There's no problems. The fuel farm we did at Grants Pass was a nightmare because it was all underground storage tanks. So all that had to be pulled up and removed, that and mitigated and all that stuff, which really drew the project out. So the advantage at Illinois Valley is just there's virgin land. We'll be able to go in there, pour concrete, and put the pumping skid in there and the tanks and start selling fuel.
All right. So we'll start on that later this summer and complete it by next year?
Yeah, it should be completed next year. First part of next year.
All right, good. Let's look ahead. Now, I know we've got to sell it. COVID kind of shut down some of the operations of the airport, in particular Celebration. We've got that coming back, do we not?
Yes.
Airport Days?
Yes. Appreciate you asking that. Yeah, Airport Days will be June 15th, Saturday. That's the Father's Day weekend, which is Father's Day is on Sunday. And that'll be from 9 to 3 out at Grants Pass Airport. And we're still planning, but we've got some commitments and some really interesting aircraft that will be on static display, live music, food court with food trucks, small car show. It'll last time, which 2 years ago, we got about 3,000 people from the community that showed up for that event.
Okay. Can you give me some real teases? Give me some details of what I can expect to find out there.
So we've got a commitment from the Air National Guard to have a Chinook. That's the big twin-bladed helicopter.
Ooh, yeah.
And we might be able to get a Black Hawk out there. We've got some people with some vintage aircraft, World War II aircraft, that'll be coming up from California. I don't have the specifics on. I think one's a T-28, but I'm not sure what other aircraft will be out there. We've got a commitment from the primary life flights and the people that have the helicopter and fixed wing that fly patients in and out. They're going to have some aircraft there on static display as well. And there's a slew of local aircraft from the aviators that are at Grants Pass Airport. Some of them have some vintage aircraft, and they'll be on display as well.
All right. Novice sitting over here. But when you say a vintage aircraft coming from World War II, you say a T-28. I don't know what a T-28 is. Can you give me a description?
Yeah, it's a big single-engine trainer. The military uses it for a trainer, and it's got a big radial engine. It's loud, and it's very powerful. It's a two-seater, and that was the primary training aircraft when they were training World War II pilots. And you probably would always see one at any kind of a static air display or definitely air shows. They're not as fancy as like a P-51, which is a fighter aircraft, but the trainer, but it's still a very impressive bird, and the owner of that is going to bring that up and have that on display.
Yeah. Is it all going to be just things to look at, or are we going to have rides? What can I expect to find?
No rides that I know of. We'll definitely have static display. We're not we're not doing an air show. That's a whole different thing. But the airport will remain open, so there will be aviators that will be flying in and out and doing some flybys and all that. So at this point, we don't know exactly the list. At some point, we'll have it on our website as we get more commitments to a specific aircraft. But with the military and some vintage and some of the current general aviation aircraft out there, I hope to see. In the past, we've had like biplanes, the twin wing, kind of aerobatic
open
wing
cockpit.
Walker kind of.
Yeah.
So hope to see some of those as well. So should be a crowd pleaser with that, as well as the the car show. So one thing I've heard is that, you know, people that are drawn to car shows kind of also like to see aircraft, and people that go to aircraft like to see the classic car shows. So they go hand in hand.
All right, so that's coming up again. June 15th, Father's Day weekend.
Saturday,
okay. And you've got food trucks coming out. Do we know what yet? Any commitments yet that you can share with us?
I don't have the list yet, but I'll definitely put it up on our
tempt our taste buds.
Yeah, definitely. The one thing that we have that we always count on is we have the local EAA chapter. That's the Experimental Aircraft Association. That's a national association. There's a chapter out at Grants Pass Airport. They put on a pancake breakfast every the morning of the show. So that's something that people can start the day with that.
Will they have any of their aircraft out there?
They should, yeah. They like showing off some of their stuff that they built and that they're working on.
All right, let me see. I'm probably going to date myself here, but I had a friend who was going to build a Quickie 2. Now we're probably talking 40 years ago. Quickie 2, does that make any sense?
For me, no. Okay. I am not a pilot, so I'm not sure about that. You got me on that one. I'm going to have to look that up and Google it when I get out of here.
Okay. Yeah. All right. I guess it was a lot of styrofoam in that. I was amazed at the structural integrity that he was talking about. At any rate, so what do we need to know about the airport right now as a consumer? How can I take advantage of it? Can I get freight flown in here? Can I go out and learn to fly?
Oh, definitely. So we have flight training, Pacific Aviation's out there. They offer flight training if somebody wants to get their private pilot's license. There's a charter pack jet that if somebody wanted to charter an aircraft for travel, they can do that there. That's a local resource.
Yeah, and I keep seeing ads say that, private jet travel is not as expensive as you might think, and we can do it out of Grants Pass's airport.
We can, yeah. They offer that.
All right, we're coming down to about our last couple of minutes here. Steve, what do I need to know about the Grants Pass Airport? What do I need to take away from today's show other than the June 15th date for airport days?
Hoping everybody knows that we're working on trying to expand and add more services. The plus to the community is it brings opportunities into the local businesses. We do have companies that are outside of Oregon that fly in their employees and do Hellgate. They do local fishing. They run the river. So it's a gateway for other businesses to bring people in, and if they're that helps the hospitality industry and all that. So. And the other thing that's hopefully a comforting thing is if there was ever like a Cascadia quake or some kind of a natural disaster, you know, it is a way for resources to be flown in if they had to get the guard to fly in water or fly in resources or first aid stuff. We offer, you know, that would be an opportunity there. So.
Could that happen? Is the airport self-sufficient?
Yeah, one of the things we do is it's called resiliency. We plan and we try to look at our systems. We look at what it would take. You know, worst case scenario for us, if it was a bad enough quake, there's going to be some damage to the runway. But we try to gear up to make sure we can kind of do quick patch, whatever, to keep it open. Because it would be literally, in a case like that, a lifeline for resources in and out or life flight or whatever. So we do our best to plan.
You have power generation?
We do. We have a generator that's on site so we can keep our beacon going, our runway lighting, the things, flowing fuel, the power to the fuel farm. And so, yeah, we're set up to with that in mind.
All right. Steve, I want to thank you very much. We appreciate your time today. Contact information for the airport. Phone number, website, you tell me.
Sure. Phone number is 541-955-4535. And website, we're a department within the Josephine County website. If you just go to Josephine County website, list the departments, click airports. We've got some cameras. People can look live feed on the runway if they want to look at aircraft at either one, taking off and landing. And we post any pertinent information on our website as well.
All right. Steve Dobbs. Thank you very much. We appreciate your time today. Keep them flying, Steve.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You're listening to the Tuesday Talk Show here on KAJO Radio, AM 1270, 99.7 on the FM band, and heard all around the world on KAJO.com. Final reminder, don't forget the candidate interviews coming up on April 24th right here on KAJO Radio, about 3 days of those. And then on the last Tuesday of this month, we'll have the county code amendments on for the full hour. Once again, you're listening to KAJO, Grants Pass, Oregon. Metal Math.